Welcome to the Building BN podcast, where we take an inside look at Bloomington Normal economic development with industry pros, local businesses, and community partners. Hosted by your BN EDC. But yeah, before we get started, we always like to get the background. And Ray, I know you've been on here before, so we've got a little bit of your history on how you got to Bloomington Normal. But Mark, if you could tell us, like, what's your background? How did you end up here?
Sure. Originally from Easton, Pennsylvania. It's about an hour north of Philadelphia. Came out here after, in about 2014, when I got a scholarship to Illinois State for my master's in history.
Oh.
And couldn't pass up the offer and fell in love with the campus right away. And that's where I met my wife. She's from Towanda, so we settled down here in Bloomington Normal and planning to, you know, live the rest of our adult lives here because we love it so much.
Yeah, it is a great place to live, work, and play. So what was your undergrad master's? Or not master's, your undergrad degree?
Yeah, so my undergrad was in history.
Okay.
My first master's was in history, and the second was in urban planning. So, yeah, hence why I got into community planning.
Nice. And then what is a unique personal fact about yourself besides being a history buff?
Right, I do want to hear what your interesting fact is. So. I would say, so the two that came to my mind is I have, you know, my wife and I love to visit national parks, and
Okay. We
visit about 20 or so far, and we'll get to all of them. We're going to knock off a couple. We're going to go to Smokies this year. And then the other fun fact is I love to read, especially fiction.
Mm.
And probably my favorite author is Stephen King, and I've read about 37 of his books, and all my on my bucket list is to read all of his books.
Wow.
So as long as I read at least one a year, I'll hit that goal.
So are you more into the horror books or sci-fi? Because I know Stephen King does a little bit of everything.
Yeah, I actually like I like his classic stuff, but some of his newer stuff has really been a renaissance. So I really like his newer stuff, especially the mysteries. But honestly, I like it all, really.
I think my wife, Sarah, just finished one called Fairy Tale, maybe.
Yeah, I read that last year. It was really good. It was fantasy. It was really good.
Yep.
But yeah, I would say, you know, my favorite by him is Salem's Lot, and then I also like 11/22/63, and then The Stand as well. The Stand is a really good story as well.
Nice. And so, yeah, Ray, they put you on the spot, so you have to tell us your fun fact again.
Born and raised in Hong Kong, mm-hmm. Went to Canada for my undergraduate degree in regional and urban planning, and then it was too cold for me in Central Park, Canada, and so I came down to the States. And so actually the first night I was spending in the state of Illinois, went to graduate school in Southern Illinois University in Edwardsville,
sure.
Majoring also in regional and urban planning. Yeah, just been here in the States ever since, but did go back to work to Hong Kong to work for a global consultancy in planning, AECOM, and was there a few years and came back to the States and working primarily for different local governments in Missouri and Illinois. And so before coming to work for McLean County Regional Planning Commission, I was with the city of Decatur. Mm-hmm. And yeah, actually, one of my other stops in my career was with the city of Edwardsville, and so there was okay. Southern Illinois, and so kind of, yeah, make a few stops
yep.
on the east side of the Mississippi River.
It could be a fun fact that you're from Decatur too. We were actually at Rotary Club yesterday morning, and Vasu was speaking, and she said she was from Decatur, and somebody leaned over and was like, "Is every from Decatur move up here?" Yeah, I was like, actually, if you look at a lot of leadership roles, yes, we're all from Decatur, and we always joke that if we could do development, you know, in Decatur, you could probably do it anywhere, which makes Bloomington Normal pretty easy to do what we do.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, there's a lot more disposable income here, higher education, and growth. So it's just capitalizing on that growth right now. And, I mean, that's kind of important to today's topic. We've grown so fast when it comes to, you know, economics and the businesses that the job hiring has gone crazy, and which has, again, put pressure on housing, which is what I want to talk about today because you guys did a great study. Mark, if you wanted to jump into that, I guess, you know, why you did it and maybe some of the key findings.
Yeah. So the purpose, I'm a big, you know, coming from a history background, chronology is everything. So this is a follow-up to the 21 housing study that was done, and this is much more of a plan. So there's actionable items and a much more deeper dive of workforce housing, affordable housing needs, what the state of homelessness is, what is the demand for permanent supportive housing. So we've really took a deep dive into this. It really was funded by DCEO as an acknowledgement that coming out of the pandemic with the rise in workforce demand, that the cost of living has risen dramatically. And in order to really retain that workforce, especially young professionals, to really make sure that there are diverse and affordable housing types. So that's kind of the purpose there.
There's a couple acronyms mixed in there, so I always like to spell it out for the listeners in case they're not in our world. But DCO is the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity. That is the state of Illinois' economic development arm. They also have a public-private arm that's called Intersect Illinois, which we work with a lot. But DCO has been really good recently at, I guess, trying to find solutions to problems because, yeah, we will – they'll say, what's going on? We hear that, you know, you need more housing. What's the next step? And it's like, well, you know, funding. And so I don't know what RISE stands for, but I know that's another acronym.
I think it's research in Illinois as
to spur economic recovery. So yeah. It should be RISER.
RISER, okay.
But
RISE makes more sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, so RISE, that's another grant. But, yeah, it's great to see, you know, the state actually finding a need and then, you know, coming up with some different plans and incentivizing a program like this. So for you guys to do this, it is a wonderful follow-up because as we talked off air, we did our study early on because we saw what Rivian was doing. And the biggest challenge in economic development, curse and a blessing, is that we sign non-disclosure agreements. So we have this NDA. We know what businesses are going to do, but we can't tell anybody. And so when they come to us and they say, we might add a couple more thousand jobs, like that's gonna impact everything. And so we're like, hey, build houses. And people are like, based off of what data? So that's why we did the housing study to show that, listen, the study is only here to say we need houses. Here's our projected growth. Here is what's available. And that's all it did. But it didn't actually say what the needs were. So yours following up is the needs assessment. Perfect timing as we get into construction season because I believe there's close to 3,000 units that are planned. Maybe we don't have the price points down, but I do know affordability is a major issue. So with that, if you wanted to jump into, I guess, some of the findings from this awesome 90-plus page document you guys kicked out.
Yeah, the executive summary kind of covers this, but obviously TPMA deserves a bulk of the credit because they've done a lot of the compiling, and we did a lot of the outreach and the internal digging for data. But some of the key findings is just an overall lack of affordable housing. We know that housing costs have gone up across the board 40% between 21 and 2023. And so there's definitely an increasing share, about 40% of renters who are paying more than 30% of their income. So they're considered rent burdened. And these are individuals who may not have historically worried about affording their home. And because property values are up and the taxes have gone up, and that's impacted people left and right, whether they're a homeowner or a renter. So the housing costs have gone up. It goes into full detail there. It does give a rough updated estimate on the overall housing unit shortage, which I believe is about 7,000 or 8,000 is our updated one after some updated data. And then we also, based on some formulas and some research, we estimate about 300 to 350 of permanent supportive housing units needed to really address the homelessness crisis dead on. So those are some key data points. It also goes into key findings from the stakeholder workshops. There are two overarching goals that were identified, and both prioritize an affordable and diverse housing project that is walkable and can be connected with transit, so that that is already part of it. And then also the public forum that we had goes into, the data that we have related to the public forum goes into what kind of the key findings were, what were some key takeaways, and definitely zoning changes has come up a lot. It's come up to the point where I'm kind of tired of talking about it. So it's come up a lot. And I definitely would say that if you only have, you know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes to read it, read the executive summary and check out some of the data analysis, I think that you'll find that it's pretty digestible, and that because a lot of the workforce growth has been especially entry-level jobs, mm-hmm. these are not high-paying jobs. So you're seeing a mismatch between a lot of the high-end luxury housing, which is great because you have more filtering going on. But then the flip side is, if we don't have a more diverse type, then those people who are trying to, you know, live here and not have to commute more than 45 minutes, they will need more housing options, and that includes price point and typology. So I think that going through this plan has been really eye-opening to really show the full spectrum of how deep and wide the issue is, and I think that it's really quite comprehensive. We think that the recommendations, which Ray is going to speak to, it's a nice menu of options. It's not, you know, based on a hierarchy or tier. And so that menu provides a little bit more flexibility, which I think will play out better in the long run. So again, a lot of research went into this. I think that honestly, this is the best product that we are all capable of, because we've put, you know, a lot of work into it.
Yeah, a lot of time and energy, a lot of groups. I was on a couple of those. And one of the things that, you know, I don't know if a lot of people are going to rush out and read this that are listeners. If you're good in your job right now and you're happy with your current income and your house, I always ask people to just do an exercise and pretend that you are either, you know, a Rivian worker that's going in, they're starting off at $55,000 a year, go try to find a home. Or, I mean, we've got all these wonderful college students right next door. There's over 22,000 college kids. And it's like, you know, if you're a recent grad, where are you going to live? You know, if you're going to be a teacher, there's nurses, there's so many in-demand jobs that we have. And we always talk about the great things that we're doing for STEM readiness, for science, technology, engineering, and math, to try to get these students to stick around and retain. But again, put yourself in their shoes right now. And I think what you just said, you're considered to be, you know, rent burden or housing burden if that housing cost is over 30% of your income. I can't imagine, like, just pretend right now, even if you have a great job, because a lot of people said, like, oh, our house's values are going up. Cool. If you could sell it, you're going to make some money. But where are you going to live? So either way, like, tell me, based off of your income, like, are you spending over 30%? I think the majority of the people moving here now are, which is why, you know, you heard from Rivian that 50 to 80% of the people are driving from 45 miles away. Well, after some time, that gets a little old, which equals high turnover. And we know if there's high turnover, that's a lot of cost to a business. And so for us, we cannot stress enough. I mean, the demand we're seeing now is from the businesses that are here. We're still talking to prospects. Mm-hmm. We know of other projects that could be coming. And if they come, I mean, we have three of them in the pipeline right now. That's over 300 jobs each. And so if we land all these things, you're talking another 1,200 jobs. There's other ones that are there. It could be another 2,000. And so we're like, we're selling the labor shed.
Yeah, I think the aging housing stock is critical here, because more than, I believe, more than two-thirds, I think it's almost close to three-quarters of all of our housing stock in the county was built before 2000. And so when we look at aging housing stock and the amount of homes, just the sheer percentage that need a lot of love and work, mm-hmm. and if they are renovated, are likely to be flipped. So, I mean, housing affordability is going to always be an issue. So I think that that's something that is also critically called out in here that makes the market even a little bit more nuanced.
But it's also, I mean, because people would ask, like, there's available homes now. And I'm like, yeah, there are, and they're $350,000.
Right.
It's supply and demand. So if we do get more homes at all levels, it's going to bring, you know, supply, actually help out some of that demand. But if there's not going to be something at the lower end, and something this does call out, and I think it's not talked about enough, but with the warm weather coming, you're going to see it more, and that's the homelessness. Like, there are for sure people that are out there that had low-income housing products, and they realize that they could flip to market rate and just force a lot of people out. Unfortunately, that is taking place, and we have a lot of jobs that are going to go unfilled that I can't picture going back in time when I was a community college kid and I was working as a bartender. Like, where are you supposed to live at those levels of employment? I just don't think it's feasible. So there has to be, like you said, and we'll get to Ray next, as far as some of the solutions on the wish list of things to do, but it's got to be a multifaceted approach. It can't just be high-end luxury. It can't be all low-end. It's got to be, there's a lot of things, and I'll go back to zoning too. Like, I saw you there, asked some great questions. The whole missing middle presentation, look like low-hanging fruit to me.
Yeah, and if I can also add, the only thing I want to make sure that's mentioned in this plan that I think is really worth, you know, telling people is that Homelessness is a Housing Problem is a book that came out about 2 years ago, and the overall argument is that it is really relevant to what's happening in Bloomington Normal. And the study looked at different region variations and explanations for different regions in their varying rates of homelessness, why Chicago is not struggling with homelessness as the rate as Seattle and LA. And the commonality was that there were two main factors that contribute, or rather are parallel to a rising homelessness rate. So it's a correlation there, not causation. But that would be increasing rental prices and also the declining vacancy rates. Mm-hmm. And so when we see that rents are going up and the vacancy rates are going down overall across the board, it always has consistently and historically correlated with a rise in homelessness. And that is because of a lack of affordable housing.
Yep. No, completely agree. And so that's one of them. The one thing that this great study did is it showed a lot of things that we can work on. And I just counted the matrix, and it looks like there's 24 things that we can do.
Hey.
So we'll turn it over to Ray to figure out, some of those. And I guess, if we talk about next steps, there's some great recommendations in here. In Econ Dev, we're always looking for return on investment. Like, what are some of the ones that we could get after pretty quick, I guess, short term and long term? There's a lot if you want to go over a couple.
Sure. Yeah. Like you said, there are many, many recommendations in this plan. And some definitely would take a little bit of time, but there's some low hanging fruit. It doesn't mean that it's going to happen overnight, mm-hmm. either. As we know, housing issues been there for a long time, but we'll do the best we can. And when I said we, it doesn't necessarily mean it has to be the Regional Planning Commission, because housing issue is a community-wide issue, and it would take multi-faceted type partnership and coordination to help to solve and address the housing issues. And so among some of the recommendations, one would be to form some kind of implementation committee, and because in what form, and we can still cut studying it, mm-hmm. Whether it should be just intergovernmental only, or should we invite private sector, nonprofit sectors, and it's something we're trying to see if there's a good best practices case studies out there for implementation of housing plans such as ours. But so that's needs a little bit more further consideration. And other would be in hiring a full-time person. We call it a housing coordinator, mm-hmm. Because it is a little bit even more than the housing navigator position that's currently existing, but under a 2-year contract time span. But the overall housing coordinator would be doing more coordination, working with different partners, looking more on the public policy aspects, fund raising for housing work. And so that's something definitely would take almost like, even maybe in the beginning, like a part-time type position, but grow into a full-time, because it does take a lot of time and energy to even implement all the recommendations. Another idea is to have an information hub on housing, mm-hmm. Materials, issues, policies, and education campaign is another idea, because we've heard and learned from the public engagement, people might think differently on housing, but there's so many different angles, and there are different programs out there from the federal to the states to the local governments, and other different programs to township governments. And so there are a lot of information out there that can be centralized and then can also be to promote and educate, publicize in, like you said, Patrick, earlier about zoning and land use. That's another area that we have heard and seen in not just in Bloomington and Normal from the public comments and feedback, but that's happening around the country. Just the way that the zoning is not set up some places as what we call inclusionary, mm-hmm. and so it doesn't allow that variety of housing types, sometimes certain areas, so it's just something to need to be looked at. A few more other recommendations, including looking at funding opportunities, preservation and maintenance of the existing housing stocks, looking at what Mark was referring earlier about the permanent supportive housing, the low-income housing tax credits, there are different state and federal programs out there, working with other partners such as the McLean County Behavioral Health Coordinating Council, recognizing there's some relationship between behavioral health and housing needs, mm-hmm. and housing is really one of the major focuses in the mental health action plan of McLean County. And there are other partners, other initiatives, InvestHealth in our local area. There are a lot of different partners, different groups working on housing from kind of different perspectives. So it'd be great to have kind of in a cohesive, consensualized way to help to address this at the same time. And again, not to mention, we have to work with landlords and employers, especially mm-hmm. the major employers. Vivian was quoted just now, just the thousands of jobs, and it affects not just on housing, but on economic development, mm-hmm. on workforce, on business retention, because of the multiplier effect, mm-hmm. and the spending in the community and the surrounding smaller communities. So there are a lot of different ways. It's all captured in the draft plan, the Regional Housing Recovery Plan, and it can be accessible on our MCRPC website, www.mcplan.org. If people don't have access to computer, we have hard copies placed in the Normal and Bloomington public libraries, or stop by at the MCRPC office. They can access and view the documents and provide feedback and comments by March the 14th. That's the closing date for us to collect all the comments, so we can have work with the consultants, TPMA, to review the comments, and so that a draft report can be finalized and revised as necessary, so that it can be taken to the steering committee and then to the Regional Planning Commission for the consideration of adoption.
Nice. No, this has been great, and there's a lot, like I said, a lot of different things that we can do and trying to prioritize it and not try to be everything to everybody. But you're right. A lot of people are working on this. I mean, I just talked to the state this morning. They're working on it too. Like, everyone is trying to come up with different incentive programs that could move some of this forward. And I actually found, shout out to WGLT, when they were asking me about some of the projects that are already underway. There's a really cool map that GLT had made that actually listed all the projects that are planned. But then they start to ask too, is like, okay, well, why aren't they going? And so that's the key now. One, it's still winter, even though it's nice out. when it does warm up, then we'll see what's going to go forward. But then out of those that are going forward, what are the price points on those? Because not everything is technically affordable. So then we're going to have a better understanding of maybe what to implement out of this, because maybe it is more incentives. We work with the county, I think, last week on a new one. It's not new. It's going to be new to us, but it's called CPACE. So that's Commercial Property Assess Clean Energy. And it's a way to do a special assessment on a property where you're almost adding a new tax bucket to pay for, but you get that money back and it goes to your lender. Mm. So it's a way that if the bank now wants 25% down, then that assessment can be used to pay that. So it's a way to bring money to the table from the future. Mm. It's almost like a mini TIF that's only for you. Nobody else, doesn't take any money away from anybody else, but it's a way that they can also get funds for a lot of the infrastructure. That's the big hang up right now. A lot of financiers are fine with building the product vertically, but not horizontally, because they can't recapture roads and sewer and water. So if we can find some other funding mechanisms, maybe that can help offset. But I'm just happy that you guys are working on it. We're messing with it. The state's looking. There's a lot of people. I know it's a nationwide issue. Actually, I think whenever your consultants were working on this, they said that the fact that we were looking at it years ago, we were ahead of the curve. But it was also an issue where we saw it coming. Mm-hmm. I don't know if a lot of other people did.
And they noted how collaborative Bloomington Normal is. And we've seen that time and time again. So, the collaborative nature and the collaborative atmosphere will be critical in success.
Yeah, and you mentioned the state agency is in recognizing we got this grant from DCEO, and just talk about, but also IDA, Illinois Housing Development Authority.
Nice.
They also have shown interest recently, just not just to see what the plans, the outcome of the plan is, but then also just they have had like listening session already for once, and they continue to show interest in, that they want to see how they can help, if any, just the, and to hear the needs and what issues on housing, especially on affordable housing, since it's kind of a state agency, housing agency. But then again, to be able to get that interest on a state agency for our area, I think that that's a great, and that they're trying to see if what other resources from other state agencies that can be coordinated. So I think we're getting the state and the local partners' attention, and that's great. As we know, solutions to housing, it takes all kinds of all facets. And pretty soon we also on the federal level with HUD, and then we got the CDBG, the Community Development Housing Block, Community Development Block Grant, CDBG, that also requires a consolidated plan. So I'm going to plug in to that too, because we are working with the City of Bloomington, also the Town of Normal staff, in updating that five-year consolidated plan. It's required by the federal, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. And that housing is part of that, because that's one of the areas dealing with housing, infrastructure, other like redevelopment type issues. So it's kind of tied hand in hand, but I think it's great that it's kind of timely, because there will be public surveys for that plan to be coming soon, and people, you know, should look out for those and participate just to help to provide the input and comments on, especially on the affordable housing side, for especially the disadvantaged communities and populations in our area.
So it's nice to have these plans, because it is important. People, you know, probably see plans that happen and they go on a shelf, and that's not true. I mean, not of recently, because I know that the state does take this into consideration and they change the rules. They've been changing the rules a lot, creating new programs. Some of them based off of what's happening here in Bloomington Normal. They're making them for the state based off of why we win or why we lose. So this is great that it was funded by DCO, and I hope they can go back and create some new programs for us once we find out. So yeah, now we know the demand. So now we take it back to the developers and be like, can you build this? What can we do? Do we have the right tools in the toolbox? And if not, then hopefully the state can come through and say, we're gonna create some new tools to get over these hurdles. But this has been, it's great. I highly encourage everybody to go read it. With the idea that, you know, part of our Life Multiplied campaign was to try to recruit people to live here. And we talked to some people like, I want to live there. There's nowhere to live. So we have to get this figured out before we can even do that arm. Right now, we're hyper focused on keeping the students around. But it was even at one of your sessions, recent graduate, I want to stay here. Yep. Where do I live?
Yeah.
So I think we can do a good job of selling to get people here, but we have to have the affordable housing side.
Absolutely.
So with that, though, like, let's pretend that you guys are trying to recruit someone to the community. Maybe you got a new job opening at the regional planning and you want to show off the area. Where would you take them any time of year? Like, what's the perfect day to show off Bloomington Normal?
I want to say in the fall, usually that's my favorite season, especially in the Midwest, or you know, in kind of central Illinois or southern Illinois. It will be sometime by early October, to lots of the foliage colorful, and by maybe some of the trail, the Constitution Trail, and creeks and lakes nearby.
So I would say shopping in downtown Bloomington, take anyone right away to Red Raccoon and Bob's Bay. They're amazing stores. I've always gotten something every time I walk in there. And walking around uptown, those are some things there I would definitely take anybody. In fact, I just had some family members come out last weekend, and those were some of the things that we did.
So it sounds like there's walking involved in both of those. So after you've walked and there is a you know, appetite worked up, where's like the one thing that you have to go eat while you're in this community?
For downtown Bloomington, I would take them to the to Andrew Above, and then for uptown, I think the the Medici.
Oh, Medici, yes.
Yeah, I think it's basically kind of unique with a tree trunk in the inside glowing, I hope. But inside the restaurant, it's kind of unique.
I also had Anju as my Bloomington site. I mean, it's, you know, where my wife and I, if we've had a really long week, we're going Anju.
That's the go-to.
And then my favorite place actually in Bloomington Normal, and it's not one that like people say often it's their favorite. It's The Rock in Normal.
Oh, yeah.
It's definitely, and it's like right down the block here. It is my favorite place. The Euro and wrap and fries are some of my favorite.
That's definitely a debate in our household for the best fries in town. And actually, they get my vote because it's like it's that flaky layer.
I'm glad someone else is on my side. Yeah. My wife will not like say anything but McDonald's. I'm like, McDonald's.
Yeah, have you had The Rock's fries? Yeah, they're flaky. I also got to give a shout out to Red Raccoon, too. Same way, we go there all the time. And we actually went and saw Dune 2 with Jamie's group over the weekend. Highly, highly recommend that movie. Is that one you've read? Have you read the Dune series?
I haven't, but I'll see the movie on Saturday night with my wife. But my brother-in-law is a big fan. Been playing Dune Imperium like nonstop the last couple weeks. And
it's getting ready for it.
Yeah. So it's been really tempting to play.
I'd say a little bit off track here, but I'm just amazed that was written in the 60s.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a heck of a story. Epic. So, yeah, another shout out to them. Anyone who wants a good movie, go see it in the theater. It is very, very big.
Yeah.
Very cool. Speaking of that, and, you know, our economy being big right now and growing, why does economic development matter?
It affects just daily living and livelihood, everyone. It's housing, it's jobs, it's income, it's feeding the families, it's keep, you know, like a stable, safe environment that people live. And yeah, so I think it's just so important. It's really give that sustained growth feeling, you know, that, hey, it's a progressive environment and community that we live in, and yeah, it's multifaceted. So it's not just jobs, bringing jobs. It's more than just bringing jobs.
Yep, I agree. How about you, Mark?
Yeah, definitely people's well-being. In order for people to live independently, healthy lives, we need a healthy and vibrant economy, and people matter, not just profits. Profits are so critical to the success of our local economy, but people are at the heart of that. They're the reason why we have workforce, that we have our community. So yeah,
it's one thing where, especially with the Super Tuesday yesterday, so everyone's focused on a national election, and that matters, but I don't know if people pay enough attention to what's going on in their own backyard. Because local elections, local policy, local economic development, that affects you day to day whether you realize it or not. And so the things that we're talking about now, I don't want to say out of sight, out of mind, because like one of the projects we're taking to One Voice is to fix one of the basins so there is better stormwater, storage. So like if it floods, it doesn't flood. And that doesn't matter until you get that 500-year flood. Well, housing might not matter to you until the rent goes up so high that you get pushed out. And again, out of sight, out of mind, but that is an issue that people are going to start seeing this summer. And we need to make it a priority. So I'm glad you guys did this. Hopefully we can prioritize the list. Yeah. Get, like I said, get this back to the state, get it back to our developers, and then find out how we can start nudging. Like, it's just a whole bunch of nudging here and there. That's economic development in a nutshell. Like, we are information brokers. Like, all right, I'm hearing this over here and getting this, and how do we coordinate together? So I'm glad you got a coordinator. Yep. That could be project number one. Get the coordinator, keep this ball rolling, because we all have our day jobs. But yeah, we can't take this lightly, because it's funny. You know, I got into work for economic development 17 years ago, and it was like, go get the big business. And then, you know, the workers show up. And once the workers show up, then you get more housing, then you get more retail. And now it's funny. We just went to a conference, and they literally said it used to be businesses. Then it was like, if you had the buildings, the businesses show up. Then it was like, if you don't have the workers, it doesn't matter. And now it's like, if you don't have homes, you're not going to get those workers. And the last thing they said was, you need municipally owned and public privately supported daycares. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what? And they said, Wichita, Kansas has a public private partnership on daycares, because it unlocks a whole set of your workforce who is staying at home post pandemic because they can't afford the daycare or can't afford the e-learning whenever that takes place for another shutdown. So if you guys could offset some of that, you're going to untap a huge workforce. So
And you know, knowing how many families we have in Bloomington Normal, you walk around in uptown in a, you know, like last week in a very warm day, you will see so many families out.
Yes, kids everywhere, and I'm wondering, like, yeah, how many trailing spouses?
Yeah,
you know, we could tap into if we had that. So
it's true.
Nothing. I don't want to add that to your list of adding daycare into some of these apartment complexes, but that's coming as well. So yeah.
Yeah, but I can think of just off the top of my head two examples of the daycare by the light rail station, you know, and also in some neighborhood just for the sake of to help the parents to alleviate their concerns. What do I do with the kids?
Yeah.
So, and it could be that, you know, that they can drop off the kids at daycare right next to the train station or the light rail station, go to work, come back, and, you know, pick them up and back, walk back to their neighborhood even sometimes.
Yeah.
And in some cases, like think Champaign, Urbana area, there's one that's covered. Oh, the innovation center.
Okay.
But then they also have a daycare, not on the innovation park, but then off-site, but there's also kind of a public-private partnership, I call.
Yeah, I think Logic has that. It's one where there's like a gym in there, and it's a place where you can just go set up a business for the day. Pretty cool concept, but we like to look at what our neighbors are doing, but when I heard what, you know, site selector said, you know, we're looking at your, you know, underemployed, the people like that could be working that are not working. Right. And if you've got a large amount, we want to tap into it, and daycare and housing is the way to go. Because if it's not affordable, then they're going to go somewhere where it is.
Right.
And I don't think that people realize how mobile everybody is nowadays.
Yeah,
but looking at
critical
demography and the demographics, especially of Generation X, like they pretty much go wherever they want.
Right.
So if we're going to keep all this talent that's sitting right next door that comes to town every single year, we better get somewhere for them to live.
Yeah.
But I appreciate the partnership. Love the work that you guys are doing. Is there anything else you wanted to cover before we jumped off of here?
No, we are hoping, you know, if the plan commission adopts the plan, then we can just, you know, very soon we'll need to educate the community about the adopted plan, and then in terms of, and then start looking at how do we form the implementation committee and get things going. Like you said, Patrick, we don't want to have the plan set on the shelf. And Mark and you know, and the agency and the community partners and stakeholders work so hard to contribute to this plan, and we definitely want to see this plan implemented, but that also rely on partners such as the county, the city, town, and others, even in the rural communities.
Mm-hmm.
We recognize there's some, even nearby, like 15, 20 minutes or half an hour away, I mean, housing, they can provide a solution to housing in the urban area as well. So yeah, it's really a great partnership project, but we want them to understand what the plan entails and the elected officials and others to make this happen.
Yeah, I'll throw in a quote. I think it summarizes a lot of my thoughts. It's from John Lewis: "If not us, then who? If not now, then when?"
Yep, very good. And yeah, to find out more information, check out mcplan.org. It's up there right now. And but yeah, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you, Patrick,
and
all the work that UDC has been doing.
Thank you.
Tune in next week as we continue to take an inside look at Bloomington Normal's economic development with industry pros, local businesses, and community partners, and learn more about our BN Advantage.